hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
My special guest on this Friday is Matthew Stockman, staff sports photographer at Getty Images. And Matthew joins us now by telephone from the 2016 Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Matthew, welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Matthew, as we talk, we're about 3.5 months away from the opening of the Rio Games. How long have you been in Rio?
I've been here since September of 2014, so about 16, 17 months.
And what exactly have you been doing during that time?
We've actually been quite busy. Every event has a test event where they sort of try out the venue, try out what's going on, the actual sport, but also everything behind the scenes, the media, the security, you name it. I think our total was 42 test events, and we're about on test event number 38.
We'll talk more about the Olympics, Matthew, but first a little background. How long have you been shooting sports professionally?
I joined the All Sport Photographic Agency in 1994. We were acquired by Getty Images in 1998, and we became their sport division. So collectively about 22 years.
Have you always had an interest in photography?
Yes. I actually started just like anyone else as a kid with a camera. Started in junior high. And I think I was better at sport covering it as a photographer than I was actually playing. So I just progressed from there.
Do you have favorite sports that you prefer to shoot?
You know, my normal job when I'm not in Brazil is I am a tennis specialist. So I do 16 to 18 weeks of tennis a year, and that's globally. So I do quite a bit in the United States, but also do a couple of the Grand Slams, a few tournaments in Asia as well.
Do you play tennis, Matthew?
Poorly, but I do play.
All right, let's talk the Olympics, Matthew. Let's start with the Olympic tennis tournament. Will you be shooting that?
You know, I hope you get down to the Olympic to the actual tennis competition. I was at their test event a couple of months ago, and it's an absolutely beautiful stadium. It'll be a great tournament. All the big names will be there. I do hope to make it down for a few days of the tennis for the Olympics itself. I'm kind of floating around is how I'll be assigned. But yes, the short answer is yes, I will make a point to make it down to tennis.
You mentioned these test events that you've been covering, Matthew. Are they being held in new facilities?
Yes, the majority are actually being held where their event will be staged during the Olympics, during the games themselves. There have been a few that are in basically exhibition halls that are basically the same. The halls are, there's four halls. They've been holding them in one hall, but they're universal. They're interchangeable.
How would you rate the facilities, Matthew?
Oh, they're top notch. They're really world class. I just was out in Deodoro 2 days ago where they host a shooting event, and it's a beautiful shooting complex. It also has their extreme park, the Whitewater. Where the Whitewater Park is, it looks great. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun, and it's actually open now to the public, so the public can actually go out and enjoy the park, and it will be a permanent addition to that neighborhood. Mountain bike course, terrific. When you get down to the Olympic Park, I've just been working and been covering gymnastics in the Olympic Arena. It looks great. It's just terrific. It's really progressing. The pool looks great. It's really progressing. It's coming along.
Will the Olympic Park be the hub of the activity during the Rio Games?
Yes, the Olympic Park. It's in the Baja. They call it the Baja Cluster, which is the Olympic Park. Also, the athlete housing happens to be very close by. So it'll be the primary hub of activity.
Matthew, how many Olympics have you covered counting Rio?
This will be my 9th Olympics.
Do you have any special memories in terms of the Olympics, encounters with athletes, or any events that kind of stick out in your mind?
You know, one that really sticks out in my mind, I remember in the Sydney Olympics, the U.S. baseball team, and they did win the gold medal. But, you know, Tommy Lasorda was the coach. It was all young kids playing, young men. And it was just great to see them, you know, the excitement when they actually won it. I think that says a lot about the games. It's, they weren't necessarily stars at the time, and they, you know, they win the gold medal, they're playing for the country, and they had a great time doing it. I think you see those moments quite a bit, actually, in the Olympics, and not just U.S. athletes, across the board. You know, they're ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and it's great to see.
What really attracts you to Rio, Matthew, in terms of this Olympics? I know golf and rugby sevens will be making their return to the Olympics in Rio. Are you interested in shooting those competitions?
I probably will not be at the golf. We have golf specialists that are coming in that will actually cover the golf tournament. I have seen the golf course. We did some aerials about a month ago of the course, and it looks it's very, very nice, very nice course. I think what attracts me to Rio, photographically, the city's beautiful. It's a beautiful environment to have the games. You know, you have the bay, the beaches, the Cristo. You have the Sugarloaf Mountain. The city's just loaded with visuals.
Getting back to the golf, Matthew, I understand the course has been built near what's called an alligator lagoon. Have you spotted any alligators in your wanderings?
No, I haven't. And the neighborhood it's in, and my Portuguese is not the best, but it's Junqueira Pagua. I think that's how you pronounce it, which basically does mean alligator lagoon. I've yet to see one. I asked the same thing, and I've yet to see one.
If you're just tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm talking with Matthew Stockman, staff sports photographer at Getty Images. And Matthew is on the line from the Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro. Matthew, as Getty photographers take pictures at the Olympics, there will be tremendous pressure to get those images processed and made available to clients and customers quickly. Can you walk us through the workflow from setting up for the shot, taking the photo, and then processing it?
Sure. It's actually it's quite amazing what our technical people have put together for us as photographers. For me, you know, arriving to an event and setting up. Obviously, with the Olympics, quite a few of the positions are fixed. There's not as much roaming that you would have freedom of movement within a venue like you would, say, a traditional event. A lot of the spaces are pretty well defined. Because of that, our agency, as well as some of the other major global agencies, are participating in all the venues are wired as a VLAN. It's a fiber optic system that moves the images back to our editing in our office. So we can actually send from the camera. We plug in, and we can send from directly from the camera. We can go from someone winning the winning moment, and 120 seconds later, it is delivered to on a newspaper editor's desk. Our website, I guess, is the best way.
That's amazing in terms of the turnaround.
Yes, it is. It's actually, and it works. It blows my mind that you can be in Maracanã Stadium and our editor is in Baja, that's 20 kilometers away, and the editor is in, the end user is in London, and in 120 seconds, it's there. It's pretty mind-blowing, the technology. But it's the world we live in now. It's keeping up with the Joneses. We move over 5,000 images a day, so it's a lot of imagery getting out there. So, you know, we definitely have to keep the workflow, keep the pace, keep things moving along.
Matthew, maybe you can share some of your expertise with our Voice of America listeners in terms of getting that great shot. Let's say you're out at the Olympic tennis facility and Rafael Nadal is on the court, and you've followed him over the years at other tournaments. Take us through your mindset about, say, Nadal is getting ready to serve. Where are you setting up?
I would cover just how it would normally for a tennis tournament. Trying to, obviously he's a lefty, so I would be on what we would call, we're probably on a side that takes advantage of it, but he is a lefty, so I could actually get that. I think when you, in terms of the Olympics, I think that you would want to try to include some sort of signage, something that places him in Rio at the Olympics. The only true signage in the venue are Olympic rings, which is great. So trying to actually position him so there's actually some sort of rings or some sort of Olympic icon in the background would be terrific. Yeah, and just cover it like a normal tennis tournament, but obviously being the Olympics, it's a little different.
At the end of a tennis match, players usually greet or console one another at the net. Is that always a classic photo?
Yeah, I think so, especially if it's a long match. I mean, I think it's certainly tennis, as well as a lot of other sports. It's sportsmanship. I think it shows good sportsmanship. And I think that, you know, the tennis players themselves, I mean, they know one another. They play together all year long. You know, some of them, they practice together. They know one another. So I think it shows good sportsmanship. And they meet at the net, and they truly mean it. After 5 hours, they really put it out there. And then, you know, someone has to win, someone has to lose. And, I think that the meeting at the net is genuine.
As you mentioned, Matthew, this will be your ninth Olympics. Are the athletes overall pretty receptive to photographers being there, often pretty close to where they are, either at the arena or on the court?
I think so. I think especially at the Olympics, because most are amateur athletes, with the exception of, you know, a few of the marquee sports. Like, you know, you have obviously NBA players playing basketball. But most of the sports are, like I said, they're ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and I think they're actually quite receptive to have photographers there. There are quite a few events that in the United States that we, as just consumers, don't pay a whole lot of attention to. They're kind of niche sports in the United States, but they're popular someplace else. But that doesn't mean we don't actually play them in the U.S., and I think that they're very welcoming, they're very open to showcasing what they do to the world media.
If you're just joining us now on the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm talking with Matthew Stockman, staff sports photographer at Getty Images. You've been in Rio for, as you mentioned, a few months now, Matthew. Any more details about how you prepare for the Rio Games?
You know, it's quite the undertaking, really. I have an advantage that I've been here for 16 months, so I'm getting to know the city. I'm getting to... My Portuguese is not the best, but learning a little bit of the language and the culture. As far as preparing, just covering a variety of sport and trying to familiarize myself with the names of athletes who may be in contention at the Olympic Games, trying to educate myself to what's going on of sports, especially sports that I don't normally see all the time. So in that case, it's just trying to see as much as I can, do as much as I can, and actually getting out into the venues during the test events. And I know it sounds crazy, but, you know, figuring out, you know, what door you go in and where you go and where you set your things, and it makes a big difference. It takes a lot of stress off, you know, first thing in the morning, you know, to actually do that.
The Rio Olympics will feature competition in, I think, 28 different sports. Will you be shooting in most of those sports, Matthew?
I think so. I'll try to get to quite a few. Getty Images, we have 40-plus photographers coming down to actually cover the games. Our entire team of editors and technicians and account representatives and managers will total about 120. So being able to say, will I make it to every venue? No, I won't. But I'll try to get to, you know, as many as I can. A few sports, we actually have specialists that cover it on a yearly basis all throughout the year, and those would be athletics comes to mind, swimming comes to mind. But take a little bit certainly a team to cover, 4 or 5 photographers actually on the event every day, and a fairly good working knowledge of the sport, where I may come down, but I wouldn't be, I would be the sixth man off the bench, so to speak.
Finally, Matthew, as you prepare for the Rio Olympics, what's in your bag in terms of camera equipment for a typical assignment?
You know, we try to take as much as we can, really, to protect for the day. Usually 3 to 4 camera bodies and everything from an extreme wide angle, like, say, a 14-millimeter lens, and then on F, two short zoom lenses, like a 16 to 35 and a 24 to 70, right in there, and 80 to 200, and then try to augment that with some longer lenses, with some longer glass, depending on where you're going. That could be anything from a 200 to 300 millimeter lens at tennis, say, or something like sailing might be a 500 millimeter lens, or even something that's way out there, you know, everything all the way up to 800 millimeter lens. But generally to carry around, I would show up at most events with a 300 or 400 millimeter lens.
Matthew Stockman, staff sports photographer at Getty Images, speaking with us from the Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Matthew, thank you very much, and enjoy the Rio Games.
Oh, thanks. It was a pleasure talking to you.
This Olympic note, Matthew Stockman's employer, Getty Images, is the official photographic agency of the International Olympic Committee. Kenya's president signed a new anti-doping bill into law Friday. The country risked being banned from the Rio Olympics in August amid allegations of widespread use of performance-enhancing drugs by Kenyan athletes. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
Signing the anti-doping bill Friday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said Kenya is committed to playing by the book.
So this law is a continuation and not the end of our efforts to stand up against cheating and corruption in the sporting and athletic arena.
Parliament passed the bill earlier this week after missing two previous deadlines from the World Anti-Doping Agency to enact legislation criminalizing the use of performance-enhancing drugs. Since 2011, more than 40 Kenyan athletes have failed drug tests. In February, Kenyan Athletics Federation General Manager Isaac Mwangi was suspended for 6 months for alleged corruption trying to cover up positive drug tests. The Secretary General of Kenya's National Olympics Committee, Francis Paul, welcomes the law.
As a country, it means quite a lot. We now can rest assured that unless an athlete is caught with doping, we shall be. It means that we shall be in Rio, because a lot of people were thinking that we were not going to Rio. Even the fundraising that we have been carrying out were hampered by the sponsors feeling that we may not go to Rio. So they didn't find it necessary to start funding us at this moment.
The committee has criticized the government in the past for not taking doping seriously. The law signed Friday lays out penalties for doping and creates a national agency to tackle the problem. Those found guilty of using performance-enhancing drugs face a fine of $1,000 and 1 year in jail. Those found aiding and abetting doping face fines of $30,000 and 3 years imprisonment. The World Anti-Doping Agency is set to meet on the 12th of May to discuss Kenya. Kenyan runners won 11 medals at the 2012 Summer Olympic Games, the most medals of any African country that year. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Lenny. Joining us once again on the sunny side of sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings and happy Friday, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, happy Friday, Sonny. Good to be with you.
A not-so-happy note, Andrew. I've been seeing this hashtag RIP Prince, rest in peace Prince, after the tragic and unexpected death of the great musician Prince at the age of 57. Is there any connection between Prince and the sports world?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, on a couple different levels. First, you know, Prince was very proud to be from Minneapolis, Minnesota, his hometown. That's where he stayed all his life. His studio was there. And so you see all the major sports teams in Minnesota tweeting things out, tweeting out tributes. The Minnesota Twins from Major League Baseball, the Vikings in football, the Timberwolves in the NBA, and the Wild in the NHL. The Minnesota Twins actually took the baseball stadium and put up purple lights all around the scoreboard. So
cool.
It was this beautiful
wow.
Purple tribute. Put a picture of that up on social media, which was shared by a lot of people. A really nice tribute that they did. But we see, too, that Prince was a big sports fan. He just, you know, last month at a concert in Oakland, he gave a shout out to Steph Curry. He watched Golden State Warriors as they were playing and going on that 73-game run. And then we're hearing these other stories that are coming out. I heard a story that when the Minnesota Lynx, which is the WNBA, the women's NBA team, won the national championship, he gave the team a private concert for 3 hours.
Wow, what a treat.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And another story I really liked was that when he was giving a concert once, he had them position a TV on the side of the stage so he could watch the NBA playoffs, and he would wander over during guitar solos so he could watch the playoffs. And he actually had a backup dancer hold up, you know, what the score was on a card off stage so you could see what the score was.
That was before you could check the score on your phone. And
yeah, I don't
stuff.
Even know if he had a phone. He probably just, you know, relied on other people to connect him to the world. But no, we were hearing a lot of these stories about what a big sports fan he was, certainly for the NBA.
It sounds like basketball was probably maybe his favorite sport.
I think so. I think so. And, you know, we're seeing basketball players now paying their tributes. Steph Curry, in some warm-ups before the playoff games, put on Prince, and all the players were requesting songs and singing along. And Paul Pierce of the LA Clippers, he tweeted out, he said, "To the man I named my son after, RIP to the great Prince."
Wow.
Paul Pierce named his son after Prince. So obviously this is hitting him hard. He tweeted that out, and it's been retweeted over 1,000 times.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I was going through my Facebook feed, Andrew, and I saw a posting by Bob Seger, another well-known musician, and I know a lot of Prince's musical peers are putting out their tributes for Prince. Seger mentioned a sports tie-in to Prince. He said back in 1992, he and Prince performed at a Special Olympics event in Prince's hometown of Minneapolis. The Special Olympics, of course, for athletes with intellectual disabilities. And he said that he and Prince both performed in a TV and a special concert in support of the Special Olympics. So I think Prince had that sporty side and a really good humanitarian side to him.
Absolutely. It's the sportiness, it's the humanitarian. It's going back to the fact that it was in Minnesota. All those things really made Prince who he was. And as we're talking about the NBA, of course, Prince was a big NBA fan, but that's not the only sport he's been linked to in recent years, particularly the NFL, the National Football League. And in 2007, performing at the Super Bowl in Miami, probably one of the most iconic, memorable halftime shows in Super Bowl history. I was watching, the NFL has been promoting this, putting out pictures on their social media of Prince's performance, and they had a little video I watched. And they said that in the 40 years prior, it had never rained for a Super Bowl. This is the first Super Bowl it had rained.
Wow.
And the production designer for the halftime show called Prince up and said, "Oh, Prince, you know, you have to perform at the halftime show. It's going to rain. Are you okay with that?" And Prince asks, "Can you make it rain harder?" And he said that that was played into the drama of it all. And in fact, when he's, you know, closes out this long set where he covers all these great artists, he covered Jimi Hendrix, he covered the Foo Fighters, he covered others, he closes out this set with Purple Rain, playing it in the rain as the rain is pouring down. It's, you know,
incredible.
Many people rank that as the top Super Bowl halftime performance ever. And so we've been seeing the NFL promoting that in light of Prince's passing.
I think a lot of musicians, Andrew, under those conditions probably would think twice about even going out on stage in those conditions.
And they describe too in this video, they say that it was, you know, already a fairly, you know, slick stage. They had this tile down, and with the rain, it made it so much slicker. And of course, Prince was known for wearing these huge kind of platform shoes and high heel shoes. And he was just out there rocking it, you know, shredding away on the guitar, no problem whatsoever. So really, you know, an iconic music moment, but really an iconic sports moment as well.
Rest in peace, Prince. He'll be greatly missed, Andrew, in the sports world, too.
Absolutely, as we're seeing through social media with all these players.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew, and have a good weekend.
Thank you very much. You as well.
And that wraps up the April 22nd edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Bill Andrade, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a good weekend, everyone. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For 46 years now, the United States and many other countries have observed April 22nd as Earth Day. Back in 1970, Earth Day was the culmination of a movement born out of growing public outrage at the lack of political response to rampant pollution and gross environmental degradation perpetrated around the country. That first Earth Day attracted over 20 million participants, and since then, the movement has continued to grow and expand to encompass all environmental issues, including most recently climate change. This year's theme is Trees for the Earth. Forests are the Earth's lungs, and as such are critically important to our well-being. They capture and store the greenhouse gas carbon dioxide and produce oxygen. They regulate global and regional climate systems and release moisture into the atmosphere, which then returns to the Earth in the form of rain. For local populations, they are a vital source for food, fuel, medicines, and income-generating forest products, such as rubber and nuts. So if a forest is cut down, the negative effect is far-reaching in its degradation of our common habitat. When trees are logged, the trees themselves and the denuded landscapes release their stored carbon dioxide. In fact, deforestation and land use changes produce nearly one quarter of global greenhouse gas emissions. Nonetheless, every year we lose over 15 billion trees due to deforestation, land development, and poor forest management. This degrades our environment and exacerbates both the causes and effects of climate change. The idea behind this year's slogan, Trees for the Earth, is to inspire people to plant trees, 7.8 billion of them, by the year 2020. Nearly 8 billion new trees will help us fight climate change and pollution, slow down environmental degradation, and protect biodiversity. On this Earth Day, let us remember that reductions in deforestation and mass planting of new trees can help curb many of the environmental problems our planet faces today.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best. Right here on VOA Africa.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.